This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 27th of November 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. Today I'm joined by film critic Tara Judah for our weekly review of what's on at the cinema. Up for discussion, we have a Swedish film called My Skinny Sister that explores the relationship between two adolescent sisters. Then model-turned-actress Agnes Dean stars in Scottish period drama Sunset Song and will turn finally to the BFI as they re-release the 1965 classic Dr. Zhivago as part of their love season. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Tara. We're going to begin with My Skinny Sister. In this Swedish film, we're introduced to two adolescent sisters, Katja and Stella, whose relationship is tested as Stella bears the burden of knowing about her older sister's secret eating disorder. Tara, first of all, tell us a little bit about how the story unfolds.
Yeah, so Stella is basically in awe of her older sister, Katja, who is a figure skater and very beautiful in a stereotypical way teenager. She's very successful, she's good at her grades, you know, she seems to be living kind of like the perfect teenage life. And Stella's a sort of awkward preteen looking up to her older sister for all of those sorts of cues as she starts to discover things about her gender, maybe she's starting to realize her sexuality, these sorts of questions that are kind of coming up for her. And what happens is she sees her sister in such an idealized light that when she realizes there's something wrong, she doesn't know what to do about it. How does the younger sister, who really idolizes, you know, their older sister, deal with something like that? Do they go to the parents? Then is that kind of betraying, you know, that sisterly bond? How can you deal with these sorts of issues in the home? And there's also this very much intense idea of the pressures that teenagers go through. So Katja's got pretty much everything from the outside, but there's a lot of pressure on her to continue to perform well, to do well at school, you know, to be the kind of perfect sister, the perfect daughter, to do all of these things. And the way that that manifests itself is through this eating disorder.
How does Stella find out about it? I mean, is it kind of a gradual process of discovering about the eating disorder?
Yeah, well, I think that's also a really interesting part of the film is that the parents are so distracted, they don't notice what's going on. But Stella's close to her sister. They spend a lot of time hanging out together when they can, and she's always just sort of looking and around the corner, you know, as you do when you're a younger sibling idolizing your older sibling, you're kind of keen to see what are they doing and how are they living. And she notices that she's going to the bathroom after meals. She notices that where she used to sit on the couch and hang out and eat crisps and, you know, have a great time, she's sort of pushing those things aside. And slowly these strange behaviors and also, I think, an irrational kind of sort of anger towards her younger sister, who is enjoying all of those things, starts to come out, and Stella realizes something's not quite right. She first, you know, confronts her sister, but really just doesn't know what to do because the parents just completely are oblivious to what's happening.
Right, and I mean, using young actors throughout is always quite a challenging thing for a filmmaker. What are these performances like? How does the director Lenken, how does it fare, this film?
I think the performances are really strong, and particularly from the younger sister. This young girl is really the main character in the film, even though she's not the one who's suffering the eating disorder. The film is very much told from the perspective of what do you do when you're the person who is in a position of the most helplessness. You know, she's not really independent in any way. She's very young. She's got all these adults and other people around her, but no one seems to be listening to her, and she doesn't really know how to speak up. So we get a lot of close-ups. I mean, this is really how the film does it, is making sure that we have a lot of insight into her facial responses to things, into that kind of like that real awkwardness that you are when you're a preteen, is that we see it in her face. You know, every time she responds to something, it doesn't necessarily come out in the dialogue. It definitely comes out in the kind of physicality and the performance of the characters.
Right. I mean, you mentioned how it's shot. I mean, it's also shot a lot from the kind of from Stella's eye level. Is that right? I mean, what that's quite an interesting device. What do you think that achieves?
Well, I think what it achieves is it really helps align the audience with the younger character, because if you think about it, it's quite difficult in cinema to make what's, you know, largely for these sorts of films, adult audiences, able to really understand and get inside the mind of a younger child. I mean, we may have all gone through that at some point, but remembering back to those days and really understanding, like, what would a child's view of a situation like this be like? They don't know what to do. You know, it's very easy for us to think, well, if you recognize these signs, like, you know, here's a way that you could probably approach the situation or help someone. But you really do get that kind of idea of being inside Stella's really trapped point of view. And I think that the camera work's really successful in creating that atmosphere.
Right. I mean, we've got a clip of My Skinny Sister, which we can hear now.
You seem weak lately.
What's wrong?
Everything's fine.
Everything's fine. You sure?
Yes.
I don't think everything is fine. I think you have a problem.
Hör du, vad gör du? Om du berättar för någon det här så berättar jag för mamma och pappa om dina äckliga dikter att du är kär i Jakob.
Can I go to room, please?
Det låtsas typ att det här är den du är kär i.
Moon. Vad gör ni?
Äter tomatsaven.
That was My Skinny Sister, which is out now in the UK and will be released in Finland December 11th. Next on our list is Sunset Song. Here we're going back to Scotland at the start of the 20th century for Terence Davies' adaptation of the novel of the same name by Lewis Grassic Gibbons. Tara, fill us in on the storyline of this one.
Yeah, this is a really beautiful story about a young woman named Chris Guthrie. And it essentially starts with her family life. She's enduring hardships in Scotland. They live in a fictional estate called Kinraddy. She's very attached to the land. She's a young woman who's obviously got promise and spark. She's on her road to perhaps become a teacher until family crisis strikes. Her mother is completely worn down by childbearing, gives birth to two twins. This is, you know, the sort of the madness that kind of comes out of this family way. The father is a really harsh character. And so the mother poisons herself and the two twins. This leaves Chris and the other brother, Will, to kind of head up the family. The two other young boys, because it's a very big family, go off with aunt and uncle. And eventually, Chris is left alone in the house with her father. And he is a tyrant. He's a very difficult character. And there then becomes this kind of insidious idea of incest that he sort of suggests to her. He suffers a stroke, and eventually she is triumphant in kind of taking on the land and the family home and the farm, and meets a young man, gets married, he goes away to war, comes back. This is a sweeping epic story for a contemporary film to be, you know, really adaptation of literature. This is gorgeous on screen. It's also an allegory. So this book and this film have, you know, very much been associated with the idea that Chris is a character that stands in for Scotland. So her emotional endurance and all of the difficulty and hardship that she goes through is really a kind of a commentary on the Scottish landscape. And so this film is very much about the land. Even though it's a fictional estate, it's incredibly detailed in how it looks at the Scottish countryside.
Let's hear a clip of that film now.
In all of the days to come, her heart would beat in this land, and she would be content.
Didn't he let father make a damn slave of you?
You're my flesh and blood, and I can do with you what I will.
Wait till you find yourself in the arms of your lad at the harvest time.
Well, I'd soon be after you, the lads, with your eyes like that.
Now, the lead role of Chris Guthrie is played by ex-model Agnes Dean, and this is her fourth film, but her first lead role. How did you rank her performance? I mean, is she strong enough to carry this film?
Yeah, I've got to say I was really pleasantly surprised. I've seen Agnes Dean in Electricity most recently and didn't think too much of that film. Don't know all that much about her other abilities because I'm, you know, film focused, but she is magnificent in this role. She definitely has the chops for acting, and I think that, you know, working with a director like Terence Davies has certainly brought out a very strong performance in her.
Okay. And you mentioned that this is obviously an adaptation, and you said it was kind of literature on film. Can you go into a bit more what you mean by that? I mean, this hasn't, we should point out, it hasn't been kind of widely acclaimed in the same way that his other films have been.
No, it's interesting. I think that, you know, this is a Terence Davies film that will probably stand the mark of time in 10 or 20 years when we look back. You know, like Distant Voices, Still Lives, like House of Mirth, Of Time in the City, Deep Blue Sea, you know, his films have something that endures, and I don't think that this film's any different. However, it is a lot more lengthy. It's still very much in I think, tonally how he films. So the shots are static often. They're quite slow. There is this slow sense of movement in the film, but it looks like literature. You know, and this is something that he really captures magnificently, is that when we see the fields and the clouds and the sky, he holds the shot for as long as you would be reading a passage in a book. And I think that he's a very intuitive director and finds a way to make those passages that you would be reading in the novel come to life in that same pacing on screen. And I understand that that's probably a lot slower than what people are used to, particularly with historical drama, even though, you know, those films tend to be a little longer. He does really take his time with those images, and they are absolutely stunning.
And in terms of the plot, I mean, does it stay true to the novel? I mean, it obviously covers this wide range of time and place as well.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it is a true to the novel adaptation, but also it's worth bearing in mind that, you know, Terence Davies is interested in certain things in his films, and those themes do carry across. So, you know, the kind of overbearing fathers, you know, that we see time and again in his films, the role of the strong woman, and, you know, it's amazing that he's picked this, I think, this novel, because he's picked one of those female characters in, you know, what is essentially a book written by a man, and this is a film directed by a man, that still comes out kind of triumphantly for the woman. It feels like it has a feminist eye to it. And I think that's a really difficult thing sometimes for, you know, male writing and male directing to achieve.
Sunset Song will be released in the UK and Ireland on the 4th of December. Finally, we have the 50th anniversary re-release of David Lean's Dr. Zhivago. This film, originally released in 1965 and starring the late Omar Sharif, won 5 Academy Awards and is the 8th most successful film of all time at the US box office. Tara, what do you think is the kind of enduring appeal of this film?
Yeah, I love that this film has an enduring appeal, and I think that it's because we do like big, grand epic films, not necessarily on your iPhone or on your computer at home. This is one that needs a cinema. So its 50th anniversary, part of the BFI Love season, is a great opportunity for it to be brought back to big screens. It needs to be on the big screen. It has, you know, David Lean has this way of shooting landscapes and places that they become the character as well in the film. This is 3 years after Lawrence of Arabia. And even though we don't have the sort of, you know, sweeping deserts, what we do have is this bitter cold. You know, it's against the Russian Revolution. We really get some of those themes drawn out of the way in which he shows us the kind of the physicality of Russia at that time. So this film is an enduring epic, I think, because also it's a romantic story. And, you know, romance against a political backdrop can be a little bit jarring. And I think that's why when the film first came out, it wasn't quite as well received. And it took some time to kind of build its audience. I don't think it's disrespectful to the politics in the film that it foregrounds the romance. And Julie Christie and Omar Sharif are just magnificent in this film. It's also got a stellar supporting cast. We've got Tom Courtney, Alec Guinness as well in this film. So, you know, a really sort of strong film in many ways.
It's being re-released as part of the BFI's Love season here in London. I mean, for you, where does the relationship between Lara and Yuri rank in the kind of list of all great on-screen romances?
Yeah, I think this one's pretty high. This is one that I've definitely sat and wept to in a cinema. You know, I think Julie Christie is a magnificent and stunning screen actress. Their relationship is really difficult because they're both in these situations at the very beginning of the film where they can't quite be together, and they have to go through, you know, they have to endure things like war and revolution. You know, when you're just trying to think about what the sort of relationship that you have between you and another person, and you add to that all the pressures that are kind of going on around you, it's hard not to feel for these characters. I mean, you know, they're sort of like impossibly able to have this love. And it's such a beautiful love between the two of them. You know, I think that you just sort of sit there weeping and very, very, very much hoping that they'll find a way back to each other.
I mean, I guess the goal of this re-release would be to kind of rediscover it for a new generation. I mean, do you think this film has a kind of appeal for a younger generation as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is going to be one of those films that younger generations will be blown away by, because they won't have seen very many films like this. I mean, for a start, to see this back in a cinema is exciting. It has an intermission and an overture. Most films in cinemas nowadays don't have those. You know, it's that sort of thing where people are going to sit down and hear this grand music before, that sets the tone before the film even begins. I hope that they will be in cinemas with, you know, curtains opening and correct masking, so that you really can kind of get inside that world. But this long epic cinema with an intermission is also something that I think is a way of getting younger people to see cinema in a new light. We might be used to seeing films 2.5 to 3 hours where we don't get a break, and then we sort of complain about the length of them. But there's something about a film that knows its marks, and I think David Lean is incredibly adept at doing this, in giving you that intermission, that break at the right point to give you a kind of emotional moment to catch your breath, and then going back in for the sort of like sweeping second part of the tale. I mean, you know, these films like this, Lawrence of Arabia, Gone with the Wind, they're films that we just don't see made on this scale anymore.
Absolutely. Dr. Zhivago is being shown at the BFI in London as part of their Love Season, and of course is available to buy if you're elsewhere in the world. I'm afraid that brings us to the end of today's show. Tara Judah, thanks very much for joining us in the studio. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Matt Alagaya. My producer was Holly Fisher, and my researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again at the same time next week when we'll be discussing the latest art exhibitions. But for now, thank you very much for listening, and goodbye.